Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson. And did you think we forgot about nuclear happenings just because no one's telling you about a free $1,000 check anymore? Well, that's because things have slowed down. Several bills have passed the South Carolina House and are now in the Senate, where speed is not what they're known for. Interested yet? Well, I hope so. It is, after all, why we named this podcast The South Carolina Lead, spelled L-E-D-E, hearkening back to the old-school spelling for the introductory section of a news story, intended to entice the reader to read the full article. Now, we hope you listen to all four sections of our podcast instead of thinking about what you gave up for Lent. Chocolate! Or how you failed to stick to your New Year's resolution. Also chocolate! If you didn't throw your phone, I hope you enjoy the rest of this judgment-free podcast. But try and stick to something. And now, Quorum Call. Quorum Call is a term to see if there is a majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories that you should know about. Number one, Real ID is here and it's getting real. See what I did there? Put simply, if you want to use your driver's license to board a plane or enter a military base like Fort Jackson, the Buford Air Station, or Shaw Air Force Base, or any military installation after September 30th, 2020, then you will need a Real ID driver's license. You will still be able to do all those things with your current license, but on October 1st, 2020, you will need a Real ID driver's license or a passport or a military ID. So if you have time left on your license to renew, then there's no rush. But for the last time, guys, remember this. You have until September 30th, 2020 to get that Real ID driver's license. Find out more information at scdmvonline.com. Number two, Goose Creek Republican Senator Paul Campbell had his DUI dismissed last week after a trooper failed to get him a blood exam following his November 4th arrest, which is the requirement under the law. Now, according to the Post and Courier, Campbell, who rear-ended another car and blew a .09, also had that providing false information to the police charge dropped against him as well. Campbell said he was never behind the wheel, but the driver of the other car said she saw him and his wife switch seats. Number three, the 84th annual Carolina Cup will take place on March 31st, and organizers say that this year will be the last year for the College Park section, which is specifically designed for college students, RIP. The College Student section, which is located beyond the infield, was created about 20 years ago and brought upwards of 25,000 students from universities throughout the Southeast. But those numbers have plummeted due to the heavily policed event. So here's a tip, guys. Learn how to hold your liquor, or as my parents tell me, just drink socially, Gavin. To be fair, I've only covered the races, but I did attend the Preakness infield underage when I did have long hair back in my college days. Now, the Preakness infield has gone the way of College Park as well, but I digress. So don't get your bow tie twisted. The races, yes, there are horses there, will still go on. And finally, a Senate committee last week approved a bill that would outlaw dismemberment abortions, a rarely used procedure done in high-risk pregnancies. Now, only about 22 of these procedures were done last year out of some 5,700 abortions in South Carolina. The bill cleared the Senate Medical Affairs Committee along party lines, and it joins the personhood bill on the Senate floor. Now, the personhood bill is different because it treats every fertilized egg as human and would effectively ban all abortions, putting in vitro fertilization practices in jeopardy. But will these bills go anywhere? That's the question, especially looking at the pace of the current Senate, which is what our discussion is about today, which you would have found out earlier had we not buried the lead already. Hold on to your butts, we're going nuclear again. While we're halfway through the legislative session up here at the Statehouse in Columbia, other issues are cropping up and gaining attention, like parity marriage, the death penalty, and abortion bills. But the focus of this session is still on remedying the V.C. Summer nuclear reactor expansion debacle. And for that, I'm joined with the Post and Courier's nuclear guru, Andy Brown, to give us an update on where things stand right now. Andy, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
So the House has sent several bills to the Senate so far this year, and here's a brief recap of what those bills are. And please listen closely, guys, because I will be quizzing you at the end of the podcast. Now, the bill H-4379 creates a utilities consumer advocate within the Attorney General's office. Bill H. 4378 replaces the Public Utilities Review Committee with a new 12-member Utility Oversight Committee. Bill H. 4375, this is a big one, eliminates all charges on electric bills of SCNG customers that have supported the VC Summer Nuclear Power Project and repeals the controversial Baseload Review Act going forward. Now, this bill would deal with the money that you send, about $27 a month of your bill, to the VC Summer Project, which is now defunct. And H. 4377 is a bill that reforms the Public Service Commission. The PSC oversees and gives decisions in public utility matters. This bill ends the terms of those currently on the commission and sets up new staggered terms for the seven seats. Now, currently, the bills dealing with the electric rates and the consumer advocate are before Senator Luke Rankin's Judiciary Subcommittee. There have been three hearings so far, but limited movement, and this has prompted House leadership to accuse the Senate of slow-walking these bills for a host of speculative reasons. Now, Rankin has denied the slow-walking accusations and says that bills are usually rushed over in the House and are, quote, fixed in the Senate. House lawmakers have been working since last August on these bills after the $9 billion project fell apart. Now, Andy, you've been following this every step of the way. Describe for me the differences between how the House has approached this process and what we're seeing over in the Senate right now.
I think the basic difference comes down to the need to act or the want to act. The Senate doesn't want to move until they have some financial numbers on SCANA. The Office of Regulatory Staff, the state's utility watchdog, is currently commissioning an audit that will hopefully determine whether SCANA will go bankrupt if they remove these $37 million monthly charges from customers' bills. And so I think it comes down to that in a lot of respects. The House members have been quicker to act. They want to see those charges removed. They believe they've heard enough testimony and enough information to make that decision. Some senators have not. You know, Senator Rankin, it should be noted, does not have SCANA customers in his district. He's from Conway, so his constituents are not calling him up every day asking him to remove these charges. And so it comes down to several senators want more information before they proceed with anything. And that's where we are. The House is getting frustrated, and the Senate is somewhat ignoring them. They are going to proceed on the schedule that they have set, and they don't care much for the House yelling across the State House at them.
And it's not new to see the House yelling at the Senate. We saw that during the Rhodes Bill debate. And, you know, just a refresher, I mean, we're dealing with one of the biggest, you know, business problems in essentially the history of the state. That's what Mike Kakaski calls this whole debacle. So is it naive to kind of hope that we could fix this problem within a year or so? Or is it something that needs to be done because these House lawmakers keep telling us, hey, this is $1.2 million a day that these customers are paying for something that's never going to work, never going to be built?
I mean, I don't know whether it can be righted in less than half a year. But the point I think you just made is, and this is what the House lawmakers have said, is we can't afford not to act here. If the Public Service Commission, the state's utility regulators, don't decide who pays for these reactors over the next couple decades until December, you're going to see customers for SCANA, 700,000 customers, pay out another $370 million to a company that promised a nuclear reactor project and then didn't follow through on it. Beyond all of that, the House is also upset because just the other week, SCANA held a quarterly earnings report and reported that they paid out $87.5 million to their shareholders. At a moment whenever House lawmakers are freaking out about their customers paying $37 million per month, the company turned and handed about 80% of that money over to their shareholders in dividend payments. And I think it wasn't unexpected that House lawmakers reacted to that pretty, you know,
aggressively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it seems like regardless of maybe what comes out of the House or the Senate, I mean, even if they put as much time and effort into it, I mean, is it going to be probably a legal challenge anyway, especially when we talk about repealing that controversial Baseload Review Act going forward, do you think, from what you've been hearing?
If they repeal the Baseload Review Act in a way that strips SCANA of the $37 million per month that they collect every month, there will be a legal challenge. There will be a court case probably in the Supreme Court or whichever jurisdiction is right, probably within a couple days of the governor signing it, which he said he will. You know, the legal challenges here, what House lawmakers are frustrated with, though, is the Senate has had three subcommittee meetings, and they have actually never discussed the possibility of removing that $37 million per month. So it's not that the Senate is taking their time debating, it's that they're not debating it at all. And House lawmakers are quickly, you know, coming to the end of their rope on this. And I expect in the next couple of weeks, we will see the type of reaction that we did with the gas tax debate, where you will have almost the entire House standing at a podium in the center of the state house, essentially complaining about the Senate's inaction.
Oh, memories, memories. I remember that press conference. But yeah, again, I mean, that's, I think, like you said, it's been three meetings. We've been to those meetings. Short meetings, too. I mean, we haven't even really heard too much testimony. We heard from some people, but it doesn't seem like the meetings that you saw coming out of the House Utility Ratepayer Protection Committee. And I did speak to that committee's chairman, Peter McCoy, about this, too. And he said that the goal of the House is essentially to protect the ratepayers and to provide relief to the ratepayers. Are you seeing any real fire in the belly of any of the Senate lawmakers? I mean, we saw a lot over in the House. But, I mean, we see it from Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey a good bit, and he's on Rankin's subcommittee. But I don't feel that same energy compared to the House versus the Senate. Is it because these House guys are so much more local, so they hear so much more from their constituents, or what's the...
I hate to be pessimistic here, but the House is up for re-election this year. These lawmakers made some promises over the past half year to right this situation for their customers. Rankin thinks that at times the House overpromised, and Senator Massey, you know, the Republican majority leader, still seems set on doing something, but they're kind of in a holding pattern for now. Even Massey, who sat on the investigative committee that looked into the VC Summer Project, he's kind of sat back now and said, we need more financial information. So that's kind of what they're waiting on, is for ORS to have this outside accounting firm, which they've commissioned now, look at SCANA's finances and determine whether or not they could survive the lawmakers stripping them of that $37 million per month. And until that happens, I'm not sure you can expect anything from the Senate. I think that you could see maybe some movement in the subcommittee, but this will definitely not be passed on the Senate floor while this audit of SCANA's finances that is outstanding.
Mm-hmm. We're going to see some developments likely this week over in the House dealing with the Senate bill, S-954. Which is similar to a House bill that lawmakers sent over to the Senate. But this is, what, the only bill that the Senate has sent over to the House so far dealing with nuclear reforms? Can you talk about that, Andy?
Yeah. So here is what has happened thus far. The Senate decided they are going to let the Public Service Commission decide this issue by the end of the year. They sent that resolution. It's not actually a bill. It doesn't need the governor's signature. But they sent it over to the House. The House, being frustrated with the Senate's inaction, decided that they're going to use that as a bargaining chip. And so they inserted language last week that essentially strips SCANA of the $37 million per month, the lawmakers' biggest goal over in the House. And now they're going to send that back over this week to the Senate in the hopes that, one, it makes the Senate debate this issue for the first time, and two, that if the Senate strips that language out again, it could send these two bodies into a conference committee where you're going to have House and Senate lawmakers sitting across the table from each other in a very public hearing, arguing about why or why not SCANA should continue to charge people for these reactors. That's obviously going to be tense. These two bodies don't seem to be in agreement on that, but this is essentially forcing the Senate's hand. You know, the House, as I think we wrote in our headline, is twisting the Senate's arm over this. They don't want to let this go. And so it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Senate goes along with this.
You kind of already said so earlier about how you don't expect to see something on the Senate floor dealing with the Baseload Review Act, at least. But what does that mean then, Andy? Are we going to be here until June, July, August? I mean, like I said, session ends in May, but we've seen special sessions before. And this topic is really just barely a year old, too. I mean, is that going to fuel some fire here for us to stick around?
I mean, I don't know how lawmakers, at least the lawmakers that have constituents that live in SCANA territory and who are SCANA customers, how they walk away from this legislative session without doing something. I don't know what that something is, but, you know, they've been pounding the table for 6 months, promising customers that they will provide some type of relief. And if we get to the end of the session and that doesn't happen, I expect you'll see a pretty strong response, especially from the House. I mean, Speaker Jay Lucas, has made this a top priority in his house. And I don't see him dropping this subject if the Senate doesn't act.
We just saw that Winthrop poll come out, and we saw that the state just had some questions inserted into that poll. And it was interesting because nearly half of all South Carolina residents want to repeal the Baseload Review Act. I was surprised that half the people knew what the Baseload Review Act was. But there, again, there's a bill in the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee that hasn't really moved on it. But the poll found that 49% of the people who were polled in the state were familiar to very familiar with this situation. And I think they credited a good bit of that to that $3.7 million ad campaign that Dominion has also been running, where they talk about getting that $1,000 check, but they don't talk about the fact that you're still going to be paying for it, the fact that you're, you had paid in about $1,400 versus just getting $1,000 back. Can you talk about where things stand with the nuclear deal between SCNG and Dominion, and what's going on with that?
I mean, we're in a holding pattern right now. Dominion is sitting tight, waiting to see what happens in the legislature. They obviously don't want the Senate to act. They don't want them to strip SCAN of that $37 million per month. They have said that would essentially end their deal. At the same time, they've agreed that they would allow the PSC hearings on this issue, the utility regulators in the state, to hear the merits of continuing to charge customers for these nuclear plants in November and issue a decision by December. So they've essentially agreed that they will allow this to play out until the end of the year. But beyond that, they don't have much control over this. They have lawyers in the PSC that are representing them in SCANA. But ultimately, the fight is going to come down to whether or not SCANA did things properly at VC Summer, whether they reported the things they needed to report to the state's utility regulators and utility watchdogs. And it's going to be a huge legal battle that's going to play out in a body that most South Carolinians probably didn't even know existed. The Public Service Commission handles every utility case in the state, sets rates, but they're often overlooked. And I don't think that's the case anymore. They are dead center in the middle of this thing now.
Speaking of other bodies that have been taking up some of these issues, you covered that hearing the other day with a judge saying that the class action lawsuits against SCANA can go forward. I mean, do customers have more of a chance of getting money from this class action suit than they do that $1,000 Dominion check, or what could come out of this going forward?
So currently, the fight over the VC Summer nuclear plant and its charges falls into three different categories or venues. You have the legislature, which we talked about, is fighting over this. You have the Public Service Commission, where attorneys are fighting over this. And then you have this circuit court battle. And the decision last week, last Friday, to allow these pending class action lawsuits to proceed is a huge hit to SCANA. They argued that these decisions and this fight should be handled in the PSC and that the circuit court shouldn't have any say in any of this. The judge saw otherwise. And so you have five different pending class action lawsuits that will now proceed, and some high-powered attorneys on the other side that are challenging SCANA. And so what you'll see is you'll see a discovery process in which more documents, more evidence may come out about what SCANA knew and when, how they handled their contractors like Westinghouse and Chicago Bridge and Iron who were building these plants for them. You may see evidence of essentially how the project broke down and how it ultimately came to an end.
And Andy, just wrap up. Give us a little heads up about some things that you guys are working on that we expect to see.
So I expect more documents to drop in all of this. The Public Service Commission is finally allowing parties like Friends of Earth, an environmental group who has challenged these nuclear reactors since the beginning, to request documents from SCANA. They got several packages of those documents. I've been able to sort through some of those. And there's letters and communications from SCANA's former CEO, Kevin Marsh. There's responses from their contractor, Westinghouse. It tells little pieces of the story of this, you know, decade-long project. We already had some of those documents, but all these are pieces to the puzzle that kind of explain the timeline of this project and the concerns that these utilities had with the nuclear construction dating back, you know, years. So
anything groundbreaking or bombshell?
There's nothing a huge bombshell right now, but Westinghouse's responses to SCANA and Santee Cooper in 2014 timeframe really show that the company essentially told those utilities that they couldn't complain about the engineering changes and schedule delays with the project because they were well aware that Pittsburgh-based company did not have a full design ready whenever Scanna and Santee Cooper signed on. It's a little bit of a head-turner in that the contractor was essentially saying, you guys knew what you were signing up for.
So plenty more details to come out. Again, it's constantly unfolding stories. So I'm glad we had a chance to catch up with you, Andy, and get the latest on what's going on with the nuclear debacle because of VC Summer and Scanna, both inside and outside of the State House. Andy, State House reporter and nuclear guru for the Post and Courier. Andy Brown, thanks for joining me.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now it's time to hit the old dusty campaign trail right quick to bring you up to speed on news regarding statewide political campaign activity. We are about 3 months away from the June primaries, and the campaign trail keeps getting bumpier. For Republican gubernatorial candidate Catherine Templeton, it's been a bit rockier recently, as she's taken heat for her comments about her ancestors' ties to the Confederacy and her pride for the Confederacy, but this time it was national. Recently, she gave a speech in which she said her ancestors did not fight in the Civil War because they owned slaves, but because, quote, the federal government was telling us how to live, quote. The Greenville News reported that her ancestors had 66 slaves, and the Post and Courier found such a number would be valued around $900,000. So on Sunday, Reverend Al Sharpton told his MSNBC audience on Politics Nation that those comments have resulted in a, quote, full carton of egg on her face, quote. Templeton's camp disregarded Sharpton's comments. But looking at the current state of politics, it wouldn't be surprising if Templeton fundraises off being attacked by the, quote, radicals at MSNBC. That's the term her spokesman used when talking to the Post and Courier about the situation. But switching gears, the trail pace does get quicker this month, as filing for state and congressional offices gets underway later on this month and concludes on March 30th. Also look forward to the release of dates for four gubernatorial primary debates. So to recap, the trail has gotten bumpier, rockier, and quicker. So don't break an axle out there on the trail, y'all. And in our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government, named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Now, did you know the state has 7 constitutions?
Ooh!
I know, right, gang? That's very cool. Our most recent constitution was ratified in 1895. Besides an ongoing effort by the Department of Archives to get funding to preserve these documents, there is a new effort to do something with the constitution, and it's an effort by freshman lawmakers in the State House to write a new constitution, something that hasn't been done in 123 years.
Wow!
I know, also very surprising. Now, rewriting the Constitution is not an easy thing to do, but last week they introduced a resolution to get the ball rolling, but that ball is already being deflated. The Republican-led effort had bipartisan support, but Democrats started jumping ship after party leaders said Republicans would use the ability to rewrite the Constitution for their own advantage. Now, getting the necessary 2/3 approval from the House and the Senate was always going to be an uphill fight, especially since lawmakers sought to give more power to the executive branch from the powerful legislative branch. Now, you might remember why they did this. The drafters designed the 1895 Constitution that way in case a black man ever became governor of the state. So they wanted the lawmakers to have more power than the governor, and that still is the case. Now, of course, even if they got the necessary 2/3 of approval to call a state constitutional convention, it would still have to go before the voters on a ballot referendum. So, again, another step in them trying to rewrite the Constitution, which makes it incredibly difficult to do. And we're not even out of the gate yet, and things are already kind of falling apart. However, the executive branch is still slowly gaining more power. For example, the governor and lieutenant governor will be running on the same ticket for the first time, thanks to a constitutional amendment passed by voters in 2012. Now, we're about 3 months from the June 12th primary, so start sizing up your candidates. Doesn't that sound like fun, gang? The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Watch my State House video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook, YouTube, and my Twitter page, at Gavin Jackson. Read the State House Daybook on SCETV.org and listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts. Tell your friends and share it. And follow us on Instagram at scleadpod. That's not Tide Pod, do not eat it, where we post photos from the studio and around the State House. Also, please like my selfies. Email questions about why I pronounce certain words like eggs wrong, and your comments or your gripes to scled at scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Our executive producer is Tom Posey. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on March 5th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Give me some chocolate like a Kathy cartoon.